Welcome to the Finding Grace in the Wilderness podcast. I'm your host, Sharon Hawkins. Here each week, we will share stories about how God's grace can be found during life's most difficult circumstances. Meet with me around the table as we chat with others who have found that God's faithfulness never ends. We will share truth and life and discuss faith, fears, struggles, and victories. Join us as we seek to grow deeper in relationship with Jesus, the one who makes a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. Hi, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Finding Grace in the Wilderness. Today is a very special podcast. Please join me in welcoming my friend Marie Pritchett. Marie has been on our podcast before, and she shared with me and with our audience about the loss of her son, Josh. How many years ago, Marie?
20 years ago now.
So that was a very special podcast. Please go back and listen to that if you'd like to hear that part of her story.
That is episode 13.
God's done so many things in her life. He's invested in her. He knows that she has surrendered and that all the things that she goes through, she gives him the glory. Today, she's going to share with us about her newest journey. God is working miracles in her life, and the faith that she has is such an inspiration. There's so many other parts to her story that are before this journey that she's on right now, and I want to have her back to share those as well. But right now, she's going to share with us about her cancer journey. Welcome, Marie.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad that you're here today.
Me too.
Y'all didn't get this part, but we've already had a cry and pray and spell before we got started.
We always do.
So I'd like to say we have the tears out of the way, but we probably don't. Anyway, Marie, please share with our audience whatever's on your heart today. Of course, we want you to share about God's grace in the wilderness, which I know has just been the theme through all of this.
It's a whole new journey and a whole new walk with Him. And it has showed me, once again, God's grace in a place that I didn't feel like I could make it through the next minute, but yet He carries me and shows me constantly how much He loves me and what He's doing and how He's going to take even this journey and bring good out of it.
He has a way, doesn't He, of doing
that?
Yes,
He does.
Absolutely.
He does. But to kind of get started, December of 2023, Allie had bought me some new natural cleansers and things for me because, you know, she's on this health journey of doing everything that's natural. And
of course, Allie's your daughter,
for those that
don't know.
And so she's, you know, trying to help me do the same things and get, you know, healthy and all that. So I started this cleanser. And it came from a dermatologist, all natural, you know, everything. And all of a sudden I started having swelling in my face and my chest and a rash. There was no explanation for it other than I'm thinking that it's the cleanser. Mm-hmm. So I think anybody probably would. And so I go to the dermatologist, it's getting worse. And she was like, I've never seen this. This product is only, you know, fruits and, you know, it's all natural. It's organic. I've never seen this before. But since you've said this is when it happened, I have to assume it is. And I'm going to put you on steroids and see if it gets better. Well, it did. And it, you know, the swelling went down. The rash kind of went away. A few weeks later, I noticed, or Joel noticed, not really me. Joel's my husband. And Allie noticed that I was doing some, my head was bobbing. We didn't know why. In my mind, I started thinking I had Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. So I called my neurologist and went in, and she was checking me. And I showed her the videos, you know, just in case, so she could see what was going on. And she said, I'm going to talk to these other neurologists. You don't have any other symptoms. She came back and she said, I don't think it's Parkinson's. I think it must be some sort of genetic thing because some people in my family have had something like that. But if you need me, call me back. Just kind of send you on your way. So then I started having issues with my eye swelling. Only on the left side. No reason. just wake up and my eye would be swollen shut. Nothing like pink eyes or anything like that. I go to urgent care or either my regular doctor and they'd say, we don't see anything, but, you know, we're going to give you some steroid cream or whatever.
So kind of they thought it was like an allergy kind of thing, a reaction.
Exactly. There wasn't anything else, you know, but so it's the swelling. Other than I had started this cough, but the kids had been sick. They had had COVID, different things. And so Joel and I had had COVID in December prior to the cleanser stuff. And so they kept saying that the cough was left over. It was just lingering from COVID. Okay, so I had gone back and Joel kept saying, I don't like this. It's getting worse. You know, your cough is getting worse. Again, swelling in my face, eye swelling. And then I started bloating kind of in my belly. I thought I had gained a lot of weight. And went to the doctor. She said, you haven't gained weight, Marie. I don't know what's going on. So she didn't like the way things were looking and sent me next door to have more blood work done. The blood work came back and it was showing that I had lupus, which would have kind of explained the rash, the swelling, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Of course, that was scary. It was a scary diagnosis. So she sent me to a rheumatologist. I go to the rheumatologist and he said, I just don't think that that's what you have. And so, and again, I have the cough. Mentioning the cough, you know, every person kept kind of blowing off the cough. Nobody really addressed it because I had all these other things going on. By this time, you know, it had been a few months or whatever, and I couldn't determine really, you know, what it was, except for I still had this rough cough. So he said, I want to do my own test. I want to do my own blood work or whatever. And so he did call me back the next day and he said, you don't have lupus. He said, I think you've got long COVID. I'm seeing a lot of this. Think you have long COVID. I think it's just going to take some months to get over. So I said, okay. So I started doing all these things thinking I could get over long COVID. So again, then things started happening with the cough and the swelling. It would come back. So then they said, it's viral. Your grandchildren have had this cough and you're just getting it. It's just going to take a while. We're seeing it's just lingering. Mm-hmm. So different things. I kept going back to the doctors. Well, then in March, actually, I think this was March of the next year. Okay, so this would have been 2025. Yes. Okay, so all that happened 2024. So December 2023 is when I got the first rash from the cleanser. And so the whole year I had gone to all these doctors. And different things, again, you know, just different things going on. Had a UTI, never had that before in my life. Got another one right away, never had this before. And I'm like, okay, this is crazy, crazy things going on. Had to go to the doctor. They would be really bad. The doctor called and said, your blood work is off the charts with the UTI. And he said, wait, there's something else going on. And he said, we got to get you well. And he said, I'm surprised you've been able to do it this long. I don't understand. But anyway, so I took the steroids, everything, and, you know.
So that was in 24.
24.
All that was going on.
All that was going on. So then in March of 25, this year, then I found a knot in my neck. Still had the cough. The knot was probably the size, it started out about the size maybe of a nickel, maybe a little bigger. And, but it was growing, and it was growing fast. And so I had Savannah, my niece was getting married in April. It was a big thing for our family and we were going to Charleston. And so I just kept kind of watching the knot. I would ask my friends, my son-in-law's in the medical field, Cal, and my niece is a doctor and, you know, a lot of nurse friends. My one friend teaches nursing. And so, you know, Lisa had looked at it. My other friend, April, that's a nurse, she had looked at it. Savannah and Cal said, you know, it's probably a swollen lymph node from the cough and, you know, all this stuff. But let's watch it and go. So we had the wedding and they were all kind of, I was showing them again, you know, this knot. Okay, you know, does it hurt? No, it's not hurting, but this knot's getting bigger. So a lot going on. May, Lisa took me away for a trip for to Dollywood and I kept saying, this knot is growing, it's bigger. And she said, let me mash. And she was mashing on it to see if it hurt. And it didn't hurt, but it's getting bigger.
Right.
And so she said, as soon as we get, my nephew was getting married 6 weeks after my niece. So we had to go to Idaho for his wedding. So she was there, and she said, as soon as we get home, I want you to go to the doctor and have this checked. Wouldn't say, okay, because it's not hurting. I think that there's something really wrong. You know, she was trying to protect me and didn't want to upset me. So I had already decided, because by this time it was way bigger than a quarter. And so I came home, and it was my daughter's baby shower was going to be the weekend that we got back from Luke's wedding. So I was going to go to the doctor after the baby shower.
Yeah.
So now I'm
getting ready to get ready. Yeah, we're going.
There was no time to go to the doctor with all this.
Girl, you're too busy.
I had family stuff going on.
And y'all, she's still too busy.
That's my life. That's
absolutely.
But we came home from Luke's wedding from Idaho on Wednesday. And on Friday morning, I woke up and my eye was swollen shut. So I go back to urgent care again. And she said, you don't have pink eyes. You don't have an infection. I don't see anything.
It's bizarre.
Crazy symptoms. Mm-hmm. None of them made sense. And that's why, you know, in all fairness to all these doctors, it was all over the place. So mm-hmm. none of it made sense. It wasn't pointing in the same direction. So I said, look, I got 50 people coming to my house tomorrow. I can't have my eyes swollen. Looks like I got pink eyes, and everybody be scared to death. They're going to go home with pink eyes. So she said, I'm going to give you some cream, steroid cream, and, you know, we'll see. And I want to check you back in a week or so. And I said, but by the way, while I'm here, will you please check this knot in my neck? And she's mashing, and she keeps going back, and she said, I don't like that. And she said, I want an ultrasound right away. So I said, okay. And again, I'm thinking it's swollen lymph nodes, and maybe there's an infection, something that nobody has caught. And so I got through the baby shower, and, you know, of course, my friends saw it that day, and everybody's like, okay.
I remember.
Yeah, you were there, so you saw. And it was getting big and going down into my neck going down into towards my chest. And so she wanted the ultrasound right away. So I think I had it on Monday right after the baby shower. I had to lean towards the screen where the girl was doing the test, and I saw it. And I saw her marking, you know, and I was like, is that it? And she said, yeah. I said, that is big. And she said, well, the doctor has to read it. You know how they
do. Of course.
You know, all this stuff. And so I said, I can see that. I can see that that's big. And I said, does that look like a lymph node? And all she said was no. And I said, okay. I start to go home. Joel picks me up. Within 15 minutes, the phone rang. And it was the urgent care doctor. And she said, we've got to get you in to have a CT done right away. And she said, it doesn't look like it's a lymph node. And I said, okay. You know, you're scared. But you're thinking, there's something. There's infection. There's something going on in there.
Yeah.
So they scheduled the CT right away. And I went in, and I was there for a while. She called me again. I'm so grateful to have an urgent care doctor that cared so much and took the time and invested in me, because it could have mm-hmm. Went on a lot longer.
Yeah, and that's not usually what they do. They're get you better, get you out.
That's exactly right. That's really their job.
Exactly.
Is to
that was a God thing.
That's exactly right. And I knew it was. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they just try to treat your symptoms. And, you know, then they're going to send you to your primary care doctor. Mm-hmm. But she didn't. Mm-hmm. And I know that God used her. He placed her in my life at the perfect time. She called me. It wasn't long. I hadn't even got home. And said that it looked like it was either lymphoma or carcinoma. Mm-hmm. And which had crossed my mind, but I was terrified. And I kept thinking, lymphoma, you know, this is cancer. Okay, you know, now I could have cancer. And it was big. It was the size of a baseball by this time.
And that happened within?
From March till this was June.
Yeah, quick.
Quick, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I saw those measurements, I was scared to death, because I would have panic attacks thinking that it was going to grow and I wouldn't be able to breathe, that it was going to cut off my breathing. Mm-hmm. And so even during the middle of the night, I couldn't sleep, and I was tossing and turning, petrified that I was going to have, you know, that I wasn't going to be able to breathe. So anyway, they called back and said, we need these tests done. You know, we know that there's some kind of cancer there, and we need for you to see an oncologist. So it's all moving really quick. And luckily, these doctors worked with my son-in-law, Cal, at the hospital, and then my sweet friend, Lisa Johnson, at the cancer center. And so they worked very hard, got my appointment scheduled really quick, initially, the first appointment.
And all this medical team that God has just naturally blessed you with as friends, that was another.
It was.
God, thank huge.
It was. You see God's fingerprints.
He surrounded you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the people that I needed mm-hmm. so badly during that time. Because as we all know, that waiting time is horrible.
Oh, yeah.
It's horrible.
And you don't know when you hear that cancer thing, you don't hear the rest of the story. You hear that word.
That's right.
And we, along with the enemy, fill in all the rest of what this could be horrible.
Well, you know that.
I do, from my breast That's cancer right. and melanoma.
And yeah. you've experienced that, so you know how scary it is. So they had done the biopsy, and we knew that it was not a good thing. But we kept waiting for the test results to come back. And we were checking every day. The test results weren't back, and they weren't back. And I kept thinking, this is, you know, why is it taking so long? All the other ones were back so quick. And so another friend, Bettina, that actually goes to church
yes.
with our friend Joey. And so she was also able to help me. She had worked in the radiology department, knew all those people down there. So, I mean, it's just...
You've got an inside track.
I'm
God,
telling
God
you.
Is... He's so big, y'all.
Oh,
and
he
so
is.
Personal.
He is.
So personal. He knew just what Marie needed.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. So she helped us get in there and get this done. Well, you know, we're all checking, trying to see when these test results would come back. And she kept assuring me, too, that these take a little longer. These biopsies take a little longer. So again, I'm going back to meet with the doctor, and we're sitting there July 1st, to back up just a little bit, July 1st is the anniversary of Josh's accident.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's always a real tender time, as you know. It's a time to where you're already struggling with those emotions, the loss, you know, reliving that
right.
time. And so that happened on July 1st. July 2nd, my husband Joel had to have kidney surgery. And wasn't supposed to be driving or anything. He was home, so he couldn't go to my doctor's appointment, which was on July the 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
So all this happened within that 1 week. And so Lisa and Cal went with me. And they met me in the oncologist office because they would know the questions to ask. I was already so nervous and so upset thinking that I had lymphoma. And so Dr. Bolton came in, and he's knows everybody because he had also taken care of my dad 4 years before. So he knew me because I had been to all daddy's appointments, worked with Cal.
Another God thing.
And he was a resident
yeah.
when Lisa was doing nursing. So she had worked with him
mm-hmm.
then. So he knew
So this
everybody.
Is Lisa Phillips.
Lisa Phillips, yes. So we're all in this, you know, this little room. And so he says, Marie, the reason we don't have the test back is that we can't test it here at Prisma. I was scared to death because at that time I knew that something was really wrong.
Mm.
He said, we have sent it to Johns Hopkins to have them check it. Dr. Bolton had treated my daddy for mesothelioma. And I had never mentioned it to anybody, never mentioned it to Joel, never mentioned it to my friends, never mentioned it to anybody. But right before we left, I said, do you possibly think that I could have mesothelioma? And he said, it's crossed my mind. And I thought I was going to pass out. Because mesothelioma is a rare, very rare cancer. It's an aggressive lung cancer that is caused by asbestos exposure. There's no cure. There's really no planned treatment because it is so rare. There are only 3,000 people a year who are diagnosed with mesothelioma. And it takes years and years to develop, like 50 years. My dad, it had been at least 50 years. Daddy lived 9 weeks after his diagnosis. And so just the thought that I could possibly have that.
You knew too much.
I knew too much. So I think I kind of shut down at that time because I knew it was going to be something really bad, and or it wouldn't have been sent off.
Right.
You know, so so I think Lisa and Cal kind of took over at that time because my mind was going 100 miles an hour and they were asking the questions that I needed, you know, the answers to. And he said, we're going to move forward with creating a plan. Because we know that it's some sort of cancer. It's some sort of malignancy. But it's growing fast according to everything that we're seeing, everything that we're, even from the first ultrasound to when I had the biopsy, it was growing. So he said, I don't have the test back. It may be a couple more weeks. We had already been a couple weeks, so we were already, you know, very anxious. And so I thought, now we gotta wait 2 more weeks. And so...
Oh, that's so scary. The waiting is the hardest part.
It's horrible. Horrible. He said, but I want you to go out. I want to schedule another CT scan. I need to do a PET scan. I need to, you know, whatever. So I go out and meet with his scheduler. And she starts saying, and I see her on the phone, and she was like, November. This is July. Well, we can't wait till November to have this test done. And I'm like, we can't wait that long. I know how fast this thing's growing. So I'm trying to hold it together, you know, because we're in this office and there's all these people in there that we're in an oncologist office that are battling cancer too. So I'm trying. So we go downstairs. I'm going to have to drive home alone. And Lisa knew that. And she was downstairs with me and she said, okay, sit down. When she did, I just fell apart because I thought, you know, what am I going to be facing now? What am I going to be facing? But even at that time, I knew that I wouldn't be facing it alone. Mm-hmm. I knew that God had me. There was a reason that Joel wasn't there with me. There was a reason that I was going to have that time to drive home by myself. Because Lisa kept saying, I'll drive you home. And I was like, no, I'll be fine. I just need that time. So the whole way home, I said, okay, God, it's me and you. Because I don't know what to do. And you're in charge. So I trust you. You've brought us through so much, and I trust you. And no matter what it shows. So I got home. Joel's upset, you know, because now all these things, I've met with this oncologist. I was upset. Joel, he was, again, wasn't supposed to be driving, but he said,
poor Joel.
I know. And so he leaves to go to the grocery store. And after Joel left, a thing popped up on my chart. And I was home by myself. Thank God I was. God worked that too because he knew that it needed to be a time for me and him.
But you really weren't by yourself, were you?
No, I needed that time with him.
He has a way of making it all about you and me. Yeah. It's all about us and him. Does. It is.
And when I opened that test report and it said mesothelioma, all I could think of is, God, don't take me from my family. But I told him, even then, if he did, then he was just going to have to carry all of us.
Yeah.
And he would walk me through it. And my friend Kristen Porter shows up, and I'm hysterical. So bless her heart, she walks in the middle of all this.
Another friend, another God thing.
Another God thing. And bless her heart.
She's bringing food, right?
She's bringing food. And here I am, and I'm just pacing and crying. And so I had sent a screenshot of the test result to my son-in-law. And he said, this can't be right. This can't be right. I'll call you back. And it wasn't but just a few minutes. And he called me and he said, Jeej, he said, it is. And he said, where's Joel? And I said, he's at the store. And he said, I'm on my way. He had called Allie, and of course, we were all just in shock and scared.
Of course.
And so Joel got the phone call on the way home and just said, you need to get home to her.
So Cal called him?
Yeah, so, you know, we had that little bit of time before anybody else got there, because then, you know, Cal and Allie and people start showing up, and all I could think of was my daddy and all the things that, you know, we had experienced with him, and the struggling to breathe, you know, and all that had been my fear from the beginning of the whole process, was not being able to breathe. The test started almost immediately. Again, I had these people in place because I think I would have had a really, really hard time if it had been drug out, and God knew that. And he placed these people in my life at the perfect time so that I could get these tests done quickly. My next appointment to see the oncologist, I was there on July the 3rd, was not until July the 25th. And on July the 25th, I'd already had all my tests and was having my first treatment.
He is such a watch this, y'all, kind of God.
He absolutely is.
I'm telling y'all, the doors he opened.
Yes. And then on top of it, just to show you how good he is, and he blessed us with our third grandchild on July the 31st. Our sweet little Madeline Elizabeth was born. And she just showed us, you know, how wonderful God is and how he can bless us in the middle of tragedy and bring great things into our life.
The giver of life.
That's right.
The giver of life.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And that sweet baby just was, I could go hold her and be with Brody and Andy Kate, my other two grandchildren. And it felt like, okay, everything's right in the world.
I can do this.
Yep, I can do this.
Absolutely.
And with God, I can do that. So I let my son-in-law kind of take over because I didn't know what to do. So he and my niece were researching everything. And Allie said Cal wasn't sleeping. He was just trying to research, trying to find us, you know, treatments, different things that I could do. And so he said, first thing, we got to go to Duke. So he went with me because Allie was, this was the week
having
before.
A baby.
This was the week before she was to deliver.
Y'all, I know this sounds like fiction, but I promise it's true because I've been here.
Wow. It's hard for people to believe. I know. But count, because somebody had to be with Allie.
So Joel had to stay back and be the husband for his daughter to be for the day.
In case she went into labor.
Exactly.
And so Cal and I went to Duke, and first doctor come in. Anybody who's gone through cancer, you have a team that comes and meets with you. You're in a room, and
absolutely,
they start out,
I remember that.
They start out with one, then you go to the next one, then you go to the next one, then you go to the next one. So the first one was good. She was a PA, and oh my goodness, she was so encouraging and so sweet and so, you know, just so nice. And I was like, okay, this is good. And the second one comes in, and she's a surgeon. Again, very sweet and very nice. And she said, but I have to tell you, this is inoperable. And it's around your aorta. It's around all the nerves and arteries in your neck. And, but, you know, we're gonna do these treatments. And we have a great team here that if you can ever have surgery, then we'll take care of you. Okay, so she was, you know, that was kind of hard to hear, you know, that it was inoperable and where it was, and that it affected, you know, everything runs up there, all your nerves and, you know,
right,
everything. So
right.
Around your aorta again. And I'm thinking, okay, what if I can't breathe? And so, but they kept assuring me that that wouldn't happen, you know, that it wouldn't get to that point. So then the oncologist comes in. It was bad from then. It's inoperable, it's terminal, it's stage four, but we're going to do these treatments and hopefully we can shrink it. We have never seen this before. Mesothelioma is a lung cancer. It is not in your lung. It's not in your abdomen where it can also go. It is only in your neck.
Where you could fill a lump and get started
exactly
with finding out about it.
That's right.
Another God thing.
Yeah. If I had not found that neck, mm-hmm. and it progressed the way it was growing, the outcome would have been way different. And it would have been very quick. But God.
Absolutely. But God. She's wearing a But God t-shirt. Love
That's
it.
That's right. But God. So she said that if I were ever to get, if I could get it off these nerves and off the aorta and stuff, that we could possibly do surgery. It would be a very dangerous surgery. I would have to have 3 surgeons. I'd have to have a head and neck surgeon. Mm-hmm. I mean, a pulmonary, I mean, just a thoracic surgeon. It would just be a major ordeal. And so, but I thought, that's okay. God's cured me.
But God.
But God. That's not too big for my God.
Absolutely.
You know? So, and then she wanted to tell me about the, you know, your time frame. And that's a little hard to hear. Typically, mesothelioma is 12 to 18 months. But God. Mine had already been longer than that since I'd had that cough. Yes, it was progressing quickly, but it had already been longer. Mm-hmm. So.
And it started in a different place than normal.
Than normal.
Than normal mesothelioma, mm-hmm. right?
Right. And so it was not something that they could explain. And because not only was it rare that my daddy got it, it was extremely rare that I would have gotten it secondhand, and they had never, ever seen it in the neck. All I can think of is that's God.
But you know, that's your whole story and everything. Yeah. Things that have happened to you never happened before.
That's right. And are exposed and brought to light in ways that are just so outside the norm. Mm-hmm. We left there. I cried all the way home. Mostly with the, you know, the diagnosis thing. And again, thinking, you know, God, I'm ready to be with you, but I'm not ready to leave my family. Mm-hmm. You know, I have these new grandbabies.
Absolutely.
And, mm-hmm. you know, I wasn't ready to leave Joel and Allie. You know, I just felt like I just still had a lot more life, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, but if he was ready, then... You know, I trusted him. I trusted him. I trusted him to take care of my family. And I knew that they had already been through so much. My first thoughts were, they've already suffered and with such loss that I didn't want that to happen to them again. And so we came home, and Cal just kept assuring me, kept trying to be positive, bless his heart. And he found this diet, these supplements, all these things that I needed to do. I started doing them right away. Not had any sugar since July the 3rd. So for me, that's a big deal.
Wow. Talk about suffering.
So that was a biggie. Mm-hmm. Started these, anything he told me to do, I did. Mm. We'd go to see doctors and I wouldn't look at them. I looked at him. And because he told me from the very beginning, he said, nobody's going to love you or care about you the way that I do. And I promise you, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to take care of you. And I knew that God was giving him the knowledge that I needed. Mm-hmm. And so whatever he said, I did. And so then he said, I want you to go to MD Anderson. MD Anderson is in Houston, Texas. And it's supposed to be the top cancer treatment center in the United States. So we made the appointment. Joel and I went to MD Anderson. And they told me to plan on being there a week because they would start testing the first day on Monday. And then if they felt like you needed more, they'd go to the second day. And, mm-hmm. you know, you could be there a day, but plan on being in there a week. So we went that very first day. Of course, you're scared again. You don't know what you're going to hear. And, of course, I'm thinking it's going to be like the appointment I just had at Duke. So I walk in. Oh, the first lady comes in. It's just so sweet. Cal couldn't go because they just had the new baby. So I put him on speakerphone. So, again, he's with us the whole time. Mm-hmm. And she is so sweet and so kind. And she said, we do treat mesothelioma. We have a mesothelioma clinic here. And I said, okay. And she said, we have people come from all over the world with it. And so then I'm starting to relax some, because at Duke too, I ask, how many people do you see with mesothelioma a year? And she said, oh, we see several. How many survive long term? A handful. And in Greenville, the doctor had told, it's one of the first questions I asked when I first went the first time. And they said 12 a year in the whole, you know, Prisma system. And I said, how many long term? And he said, a couple. And I said, I'm going to be one of those people. I'm going to be one of those two that they said at Prisma, and I'm going to be one of that handful at Duke. And I was determined that I was going to do that.
Yeah.
And
now, didn't Duke want to do chemo?
They wanted to start an aggressive form of chemo.
Right, okay.
And in Greenville, the doctor, Dr. O'Neill, which has been such a blessing to me, had told me that he wanted to do immunotherapy. He had been researching meso since that he had gotten my diagnosis. And he said from what he had found, mesothelioma was responding better to immunotherapy as opposed to chemotherapy. I didn't know what to do once I'd left Duke, because I'm thinking, what if I make a mistake? Because she said, you've got 2 weeks to make this decision. It's growing so fast that if you don't start a treatment, this aggressive chemo, then we may not be able to slow it down. And so then I was at
a loss. Scary.
It was scary.
Yeah.
Because if I make the wrong decision, it's going to cost me my life. So Lisa Johnson called me and said, no, I don't want you upset. I'm going to have the doctors call you. And so he did. And he was so sweet. And he calmed me. And he said, this is why I chose immunotherapy. We can do chemo, and that's in our back pocket. He said, but why would I make you so sick if we can do immunotherapy and it slows it down? It stops it. And I said, okay. I said, me and my family have prayed for the person that will take care of me, and I have to believe that's you. And we are praying for you. And he said, and I am praying for you.
Wow, that's huge.
It is huge. Mm-hmm. I knew I was in the right place. Mm-hmm. I knew I was doing the right thing.
But God.
And so at MD Anderson, when I was sitting there and that second doctor came in, he said, okay, I see that you're doing immunotherapy and Dr. O'Neill at Prisma, and we work well together. You know, the doctor teams work well together. Dr. O'Neill had already told me, he said, look, I don't care where you want to go. It's not going to offend me. We're here to help you.
Mm, good.
And so it wasn't a doctor that had that, you know, mentality. I know everything.
Yeah.
And the doctor at MD Anderson told me the same thing. He said, we're your team. We want to get you well. And he said, I can tell you what Dr. O'Neill is doing is exactly what we would do here.
Good.
And I said, okay.
That had to be a great assurance for you.
It was just like this sigh of relief for me and Joel both. And he said, and by the way, he said, if you have this surgery, again, it's going to be very dangerous. We got to get it off the aorta and get it off everything. But he said, you know, we have a great team here, which thrilled me, because this place is amazing. If nobody's ever been to MD Anderson, it took up 9 blocks. It's the biggest hospital you've ever seen in your life. And they have everything there.
Wow.
It was just amazing. And so, but when I got ready to leave, he said, no, I've never seen it. It's very rare, but I can tell you that's probably your biggest blessing, is that it was in your neck. And he said, and I'm not worried about you, Marie.
Wow.
He said, we're gonna fight this.
Good.
So I have this amazing, amazing team around me. And I call a lot of these people my village. The people who have stood beside us and encouraged us and take care of us and, you know, bring us food and send cards and phone calls and visits and just loved on me and my family. And I've had, you know, some of Joel's friends that just reach out to him. And, you know, Joel always say, well, Marie's doing good. And they'll say, no, how are you? And to me, that means so much, because I know that he and Allie are struggling with this too. This is, you know, we've been on a long journey, as you know.
Yes.
So we've done this as a family. We've been fighting for a long time.
It's hard for the loved ones.
It is. It is. And we all said from the very beginning, we're not going to hide anything from each other. If we have a bad day, we're going to be honest with each other. We're going to be, you know, we're going to share our feelings. It's okay because we're all going to have those days. And we just lift each other up. You know, one of us may be really down that day and really struggling. And, but we just say, okay, we're going to, you know, pull up.
Yeah. This is not your first rodeo.
No, it's not.
But by far. You've been around the circuit.
Yeah.
Still going.
Yeah.
I believe you will too, go to heaven. It's going to be one after another that God's going to show who He is and bring you through. I've seen it over and over.
And I tell Him all the time, I'd say, okay, you're in the driver's seat. I'm just along for the ride. Mm-hmm. So you just, wherever you take me, I trust you. And I know He loves me.
Oh, absolutely.
And He only wants good for me. You know my life verse.
Romans 8:28. Yes.
You know, and all things work for the good of those who love God. And, you know, James 1 is the first thing that Allie gave me the morning after I got the diagnosis. She sent this to me. And then you and I were praying earlier and you said James 1. And I read that. I've got my Bible open on my...
Do you want to read it?
I got it open on my footstool. And it's just, it's so powerful to me. Because I know that God gave that to me. So now James 1 is another one of my verses. So James 1:2 says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives to all liberally, and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a dual-minded man, unstable in all his ways. But I knew that this was just another trial, another part of my journey, but God was going to persevere in all of it.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to help me. He was going to carry me. He was going to push me when I couldn't walk. And He was going to do that for my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it with all my heart that I am going to be one of those survivors, that I am going to beat this horrible, horrible disease. And I'm going to be able to somehow use it to help other people who get this diagnosis and say, it's not a death sentence. It's going to be something that, but with you and God, you can overcome. And I'm hoping that in some way that God uses this to be able to encourage somebody and not give up.
Right.
Because He doesn't give up on us.
No, He never does.
He never does.
And we were talking earlier about the mustard seed.
Yeah.
And I heard a preacher this week, and it really touched my heart. You know, we in the scriptures, it talks about if we have faith the size of a mustard seed. Matthew 13:31-32 is the parables of the mustard seed and the yeast. And I wanted to read that. It says, He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it is the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds come and perch in its branches. Often when we talk about the mustard seed, and the scripture also says if we have faith the size of a mustard seed, it can move a mountain. But I heard this week that the mustard seed, there's a deeper meaning to that, because the mustard seed, while it's tiny, it grows so big. And like the scripture says, it brings life for birds. And that's the kind of faith that God blesses. And our faith comes from God. And you have always been somebody that's been so surrendered and so encouraging. and your faith has inspired people. Mm-hmm. And faith comes from God.
Absolutely.
And I know that's one of the fruits of the Spirit, faithfulness. And I know that God has grown a full orchard of faithfulness in your life.
Thank you.
And that mustard seed that you have is going to flourish, and the whole world is going to see what a big God we've got, even more so than ever. He just keeps turning it up. He's like, okay, well, let's plant this seed here. That last one tree was pretty big, but this one's going to be so big that people can see it on the mountain from a far distance. I am claiming and believing with you, with so many other of your prayer warriors, that you are going to be healed. You are already. If y'all could see her, she looks like a blossom of good health. She does. I mean, who goes through the treatments that she's gone through and has this shiny, beautiful hair and this glowing face and this beautiful smile. I'm going to tell you, God just oozes out of her.
Well, you are so sweet.
And that's the part with the podcast. You don't get to see what I see. She's wearing her pink shirt that says, "But God." So she's encouraging me today. And I know she's encouraging you. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but I had to say that. So you didn't at all,
and I know I'm taking up so much time.
No. We got all the time in the world.
And I've kind of bounced all over the place, but I hope you guys can kind of at least feel my heart and thank you for sharing this journey with me. And please, please pray for me. And one other thing I wanted to kind of share is that Cal had found in all his research, it just popped up, but God. One night was he was at the hospital researching this, that there was a trial that is had been done in France, and it was on meso, and the doctor there, and there was a doctor from the United States at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota that had helped with this trial, but they've never had anything that will kill mesothelioma. They've never had a drug, or, you know, they just have to find something that may would mm-hmm. work, you know, because there are some people who have had it long term. Maybe they've had their lung removed, or their, you know, part of their abdomen, or different things, and it's worked, or they've been able to inject it with what they call hot chemo. And so I don't really know a lot about that, because that's not what I have. There's not a lot of survivors, but this treatment in France, they had injected mice to the point of death with this mesothelioma. 70% of these mice not only survived, but it had killed the mesothelioma.
Wow.
This could be just change the whole world of mesothelioma. And so even the mice who maybe not survived, but it had suppressed it. So it's the most encouraging thing that we've been able to find. Well, it has already been approved by the FDA, but it's in the infancy stages. And we have been calling my doctors, everybody, because some of the doctors had never heard of it. Cal was able to bring it up to them. So hopefully this is going to help other people too.
Yeah.
Because now the doctors know, and they have been able to research it. They found it. They know mm-hmm. that it's out there and that it's coming. And we have contacted them and asked that they would consider, you know, treating me. But right now they're still doing human trials. And so we're hoping at some point when the time comes, it's supposed to be 2026. So if I can stay healthy between now and 2026, that they will accept me. And if I go to France, it's basically, which is crazy, but again, this is how God works. It's a measles vaccine,
mm-hmm.
high doses of measles vaccine, the live vaccine. And I would have measles, and then your body, your natural body will fight off mm-hmm. and kill this mesothelioma. Mm-hmm. So it's been the biggest thing that we can find. We are just believing that I'm going to be able to get there and have this vaccine. I may would have to stay for 3 months, but that'd be okay. I said we would rent a house.
Yeah.
And Allie said, oh, Mom, me and the kids will come. Calico, Sonia, my sister, Lisa, they're all like, we're just going to come. We're going to make this a vacation. We'll all just stay in
But
France.
They can't be with you because you're going to have measles.
For the short time, though. Once that's over, they will just follow me.
Okay.
So my brother-in-law has already reached out to Lindsey Graham, to the president. I got a letter from the president this week, and
that's awesome.
Yes, because so we're trying everything we possibly can to keep my name in front of them. So I'm just asking that if everybody out there will please just pray that this, you know, comes quickly and that, you know, it benefits me, but it's going to benefit everybody with this horrible diagnosis. And that, you know, it will be life-changing for all of us. And so that's my belief. And maybe that's why God allowed me to have this.
And the timing.
Yeah.
They didn't have it before now. That's whose fingerprints are on that? That's amazing.
Yeah. You know, the French government's financed it. They're only letting the French do it first, which is, you know, understandable. But what if I could be one of the first ones in the United States where this is so rare and there's only 3,000 people that get it a year, and then God can use my story to help other people. And you know, mesothelioma, like I said earlier, is caused by asbestos exposure. I never had a job like that. I never worked in that field. My daddy did, and they think that maybe his clothes being washed with mine had a fiber on it that when they were washed, it went onto my clothes. I absorbed it, and it stayed in my body 50 years, 40, 50 years. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And then, or now they're finding out that baby powder, makeup, all these things are made with talc. Talc is made with asbestos. Who knew that?
Yeah,
we were putting it on our babies. We were putting it on us, our faces, our, you know.
They were advertising it on the TV all the time.
Absolutely. Baby powder, not just for babies anymore. You know, we were putting it everywhere. All those things I was exposed to. You were exposed to. But your body wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't have absorbed the fibers the way I did because it is so rare. And why did I get it? I don't know, but God does. And I pray that he uses it and he uses me.
Yes. He already is. And I have no doubt that he'll continue. And I love you, Marie.
I love you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Y'all pray hard.
Please do. Please do that I can go to France.
Yeah. I know that this is going to encourage so many people. Please share it. And remember that no matter what we face with God, there's always grace in the wilderness. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Finding Grace in the Wilderness. May God lead you safely through your wilderness as you trust Him, and may His river of grace always flood your desert times. He is doing a new thing. Let's not miss it. Subscribe or follow to make sure you don't miss a single episode. See you here next time.